Happy Monday, happy August. Hope you guys had a blessed weekend and hope your week is starting off well. We're here to just make it a little bit better. We're so excited for today's show and our guest we have in studio. But before that, I always love to start out with some advice for a better life. And today that comes in putting down this right here, your cell phone. This weekend, I spent 36 hours without cell phone service, without a clock. I didn't look at it. My time was where the sun was in the sky. It was amazing, and I learned several things. I want to be able to share a couple of things that I learned with you guys is that, A, nature resets and frees the mind. You get outside, you're able to just kind of free yourself and clear your mind. Another thing is that we let the words and actions of other people impact us emotionally way too much. We'll be on our phones, we'll see a headline, we'll see a tweet from someone, and it'll just anger us, or it'll just stick with us, and that'll impact our emotions, and it shouldn't. This person and or the outlet that is putting this out, it probably doesn't have a direct correlation to your life, so don't let it impact you emotionally. Three, you can find a lot of things when you get lost. Rest is incredibly important to life. The things that you actually need in your life, very minimal. And finally, the world still spins when you turn your phone off. Don't worry, you're not going to miss as much as you think, and that world actually spins a little bit slower, so you can enjoy every single moment. So whether it's just once a week, whether it's once a month, whether it's once every 2 months, turn your phone off, and you'll see that the world is much bigger outside of that. So excited to talk with our featured guest today, who has done so many amazing TV shows. His new project, Insatiable, on Netflix drops August 10th, and he also is in The Death of Superman, an animated Justice League movie, as The Flash on August 7th. So incredibly excited. Thank you for joining us, Chris Gora.
Just one second, Michael. Just one second. I just got to get this.
What's the news of the day? What's the tweet?
Second. No, just this meme is just so fun. So funny. Sorry, what were you saying?
I mean, you're the father of three kids. You got to know they're probably always on their phones, right?
No, it's a big fight. There's a balance between the damage that the phone is undoubtedly doing to them and the advantage that it gives the parents, because it's something that we can take away.
Okay.
So it's a delicate balance that's constantly being adjusted in our house.
And your kids, one, I know, 17, a couple of younger ones. What age did they get cell phones, or what age is that a conversation now for parents?
Well, it is a conversation. I think it's different in every family. Family. Yep. For us, I believe it was about eighth grade. We were kind of late, like all of their friends.
That's late?
Had phones. That's really late. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's good though, because again, as we'll talk today, you know, obviously Insatiable on Netflix and other projects, they're so handy.
You can
just watch them on your phone. It's a catch 22, right?
Good. Now my teenagers are getting commercials for my TV show on their phone. So that's how I know Netflix is doing a good job.
It's keeping both you and I employed with a job. So I guess it's
exactly
not the
right.
worst thing.
Exactly.
And if you are on your phone, you want to be able to follow Chris after the show at Chris Gorham on Twitter and on Instagram. Certainly thankful to be here on the Popcorn Talk Network. That is at the Popcorn Talk on Instagram and on Twitter. And you can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at The Only MC. One of the projects that we talk about, the Justice League movie, that's got to be great, because those fans are just incredible, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, and the movie's good. So the latest one is The Death of Superman. Mm-hmm.
This is now number three?
This is, I think, the fifth.
Five, yeah.
Fifth or sixth. And it's great. I mean, the story, The Death of Superman, everybody knows the story. All of the fans read the graphic novel when it came out in 92. Then, you know, that was obviously an inspiration for the Superman versus Batman movie that came out last year, 2 years ago.
Yep.
It's our own take. Our own, as if I wrote it or had anything to do with the creation of this film. But it's kind of our own take on that story. It's not exactly the story that you find in the graphic novel, because there's a lot. There's the Justice League. The other members of the Justice League are in the film. But that, I think, really helps with the emotional journey that Clark goes on, or Lois and Clark both go on in the story in the movie. Anyway, it's already out for electronic download. It comes out for DVD and Blu-ray tomorrow,
yes,
on the 7th.
August 7th.
Yeah, yeah.
And it certainly stars, I mean, it's amazing people. Jerry O'Connell is the Man of Steel. You have Rainn Wilson, certainly from The Office, is Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. Rosario Dawson is Wonder Woman.
It's a great
cast. I mean,
that's
got to be incredible to be able to work with these people.
Yeah, it's really great. I don't get to work with them.
Well,
we all record individually. Maybe they're all recording together and I'm just on my own. Maybe I've been completely ostracized.
Maybe you missed that message on your phone because you had it off.
That's right. No, it's a great cast. I think
for folks our age, we grew up, or at least I grew up as a Justice League fan. I watched the Super Friends when I was a kid. So being able to be a part of that world in some way has been really fun. Like, the kid inside me gets very excited.
So did you read the comics when you were young? I mean, how involved were you?
I wasn't a big comic book guy.
No. Okay.
No, I just watched the Super Friends on TV you know, I was into the superheroes, but I wasn't much of a comics guy.
It's crazy because it's all the movies, a lot of the productions. I mean, you see it in, you know, McDonald's things too. If they're using this, and it's superheroes are everywhere, and they're not going away.
They're everywhere. They're not going away. No, we saw the Teen Titans movie last week. It's like, I can't escape them.
You can't escape that. But yeah. For someone with kids, I'm sure the kids enjoy it.
They do.
Very nice. And then the other project, Insatiable, which Alyssa Milano, Debbie Ryan. I mean, this looks like a great binge-worthy show, and that's what Netflix is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. It is a really fun 12 episodes. It's a really a story about self-discovery, but it's told through the eyes of a 17-year-old girl who has been bullied her entire life, who gets punched in the mouth by a homeless guy that breaks her jaw.
Wow.
Over the summer, her jaw's wired shut. She loses the weight, comes back to school thinking that her entire life is going to change and everything's going to be better, that skinny is magic, and finds out that that's not exactly the case. At all. She's very upset. All of the demons that she had inside her before have been now let loose. And we get to see this crazy ride of this really kind of dark, comedic revenge story.
Yeah.
It is not what people expect. It's really fun. It's God, the best thing I can describe it to for people who like are my age is it reminds me a lot of Popular, Ryan Murphy's first show on the WB back in 2000. It's like if that show had existed on Netflix. The tone is really fun. It's really colorful. It's really funny. It's a little dark. It's edgy. You won't be able to stop watching.
Which is a good thing for Netflix, right? And this is one of your first Netflix projects where people can binge. And that's got to be interesting to know that people can just watch everything right away and see the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be like. I mean, you know, the making of the show is just like making any other TV show. You just make it week by week and episode by episode. But the fact that, like, you know, to promote the show, we have a list of words that we're not even allowed to say because it might spoil something.
Rhymes with
season. I can't tell you. But there's whole things that, like, don't even mention this, don't touch on it, don't allude to it, nothing. Completely stay away from these 12 words. But come Friday when the show drops on Netflix, the whole season's out there. So, like, I don't really understand the rules of this. Like, when is it okay to start spoiling things? Because when things come out week by week, like, you know that you're going to be able to talk about, you know, this spoiler after episode 4 because it airs. But when episode 4 airs the same, you know, whenever you want to watch it, like, when is it okay to talk about these spoilers?
I feel like this is a big conversation for any friends who are watching the same show too, because when you talk about it, like, hey, have you seen the show? Yes, I love it. Can you believe what happens in episode 6? Right. No, because I'm on episode 3.
Yeah. Like, when is it okay to talk about what happens?
That should be a Twitter poll. We should put out a Twitter poll.
Will you do that?
I will definitely put out a Twitter poll of when is it okay to talk about something.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is...
Like, how many... So let's just keep it to Netflix shows.
Netflix shows.
How many
shows.
Days after the show drops, is it okay to talk about spoilers?
What are the realms that we're giving here? Here we go. I'm putting out this tweet right now. For anyone watching us live on YouTube, you can go to @TheOnlyMC on Twitter, and I'll have this up here in a couple minutes. Anyone who's following on iTunes, listening to this, you can, again, just go to @TheOnlyMC and be able to put this out.
This is vitally important.
It'll be vitally important. And Chris will retweet it, so we'll get it out to and ask his people, too. So
we want to know.
We'll see. How many days after Netflix show drops is it okay to give spoilers?
Yeah. I don't know.
Choice one.
Well, like, let's be reasonable. You got to give
people a couple days. 3 days. Well, 3 days.
3 days is a good quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Right? 4 episodes a day, that's doable.
Yep. 3 days, 1 week is another one.
Okay.
And finally, we will go...
3 weeks?
3 weeks. All right, so we're putting this out on Twitter right now. And that is the beauty thing of Twitter, isn't it? We're just putting this out and you're like, hey, I want to know this. Or Instagram, Instagram's polls, you can do the same thing.
Can you do that? I don't know how to do that.
it'll engulf your life. After the show, is it okay? Here we go. We're doing this. And I want to know. Perfect. Always got to give it that once over. Fantastic. And I don't know if it's going to change anything because people will be like, oh, no, my answer is still the right answer. So I'm just going to give this one.
Now you'll know if your answer is the right answer.
And this is worldwide, right? what everyone will have to go by.
Yeah, we're going to tell you. After this, it's settled.
What is it about acting? If someone asked you, why are you an actor? What's the answer that you give them?
I think the answer's changed a lot over time. I decided I wanted to do this when I was 10. And mind you, I grew up in Fresno, California, mm-hmm. which is 4 hours north of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. My mom was a school nurse. My dad was an accountant. I had zero connection to the entertainment industry and absolutely zero understanding of how any of it worked. And yet decided this is what I was going to do for my career. So if I'm honest with myself, the reason that I started pursuing it was because I was getting attention for doing it at school and in at the local dinner theater that I would perform at in Fresno, Roger Rocca's Music Hall. So really, it started out because I was getting attention and it felt good. I think as I got older, particularly probably when I got into when I started studying theater in college at UCLA, it became more of an attraction to the creativity of it, to the art of it, to the craft of it, and the kind of unique power that you have as a performance artist to change the culture or to influence the culture. And to sometimes it's really hard to change people's minds, but sometimes it's easier through art to change people's hearts, which then can lead to changed minds about things. So so then I think as I, you know, became an adult, it became more serious. And now I have 3 kids, so I can't stop, Michael. I can't. I have to keep working because I have mouths to feed. Thankfully, I still love it. You know, I had my very first agency meeting when I was graduating from UCLA. They asked me 2 questions that I remember. The first question that I remember answering correctly at the time was just point blank. He said, are you good? And I believed I was, and I told him, you know, and that was a test because being an actor professionally is really hard to do. Mm-hmm. It's a really tough business. It is a completely subjective art. You know, the cream usually rises to the top, but it doesn't always. And, you know, one person's cream is one person's garbage, mm-hmm. you know, in this business.
Yeah, like it's absolutely.
It's sometimes really, it's just the luck of the draw. And so I think he wanted to know that I believed in myself, mm-hmm. because if you don't have that, then really you have no business putting yourself through this meat grinder.
That crack of doubt can easily expand.
Yeah. Yeah, it really can. It's very easy because most of the time the feedback you're getting is that you should be doing something else.
Yeah.
Right? Most of the mm-hmm. most of the answers you get are going to be no.
If you even get an answer.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yep.
Yeah. Usually the no is the silence
yes.
that you hear
yeah.
when you're wondering.
We'll let
how
you
it
know.
Went.
No, we will
yeah.
not.
Yeah. So I think that was that was something that was very important at the beginning that that I had that was helpful to me. And the other thing is he asked me what kind of career I wanted. Hmm. And I told him, I said, you know, I what I want is to still be doing this and loving it when I'm 90. Like I just want to be an actor. I just want mm-hmm. to do that. And how exactly that plays out, I don't know how it's going to play out, but this is, I just feel like this is what I'm called to do.
Well, I feel like it's a career path, too, where you can do that because every, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, you change the type of character that you can play.
Yes.
And if you truly love the ability to portray that person and be able to bring that person, quote-unquote, to life, then you can do that all the way till you're 90. It doesn't matter. I mean, a couple weeks ago, we had Ed Asner in here who why is he still acting? Because he loves it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, and like some of the people that I've admired most that I've worked with, people like Betty White and Henry Winkler, are two of the happiest people who are just filled with joy at work, and just love what they do, and are still having fun. You know, I mean, Betty. I did an episode of Hot in Cleveland, and Betty turned 90 while we were there. And you know, I mean, she's 90. Now she's 95 now, and was still just passionate about it and just love it and had so much fun and was willing to like goof around with me and like we were taking like salacious pictures in bed and posting them on the internet. You know, and she was game. I was like, I can't believe this is happening. I was like, I'm in bed with Betty. You know.
Like, it's incredible.
Like, Betty, rub my shoulders and nuzzle my ear. She was like, okay. What? Click.
And that attitude is so contagious to the people around on the set, too.
You know, and life is too short to be miserable doing something like this. There's plenty of other things you can do and be miserable doing. But this really shouldn't be one of them.
No, and that you find something you love, and you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah,
is what it always says. At 10, and even your teens, what kind of plays were you doing? And do you remember a certain play or a certain character that you portrayed in the theater?
We did Cheaper by the Dozen at that local theater where I played, I don't know, one of the little kids, the little boy,
the little one,
number 11. I don't know what his name was. but like really what I was doing a lot of was, we were the pre-show for the dinner theater musicals. Hmm. It was the junior company. So it was like little cabarets. We'd come out and do tap dancing and, you know, sing. It was like a little cabaret, a medley of songs about, you know, all kinds of stuff. But it was just a great, training ground. And we had some just crazy talented people. Growing up at that time, like I remember Audra McDonald doing Evita at 18 years old in this, you know, in our little dinner theater in Fresno. And knowing then, like she was just this transcendent talent, and like how amazing is that? That like we can watch the beginning of what, you know, turned out to be what everyone knew it was going to be, is this a fantastic, groundbreaking career.
And that has to give you hope as someone younger, knowing that someone else in that same area has done that.
Yeah. Well, also, I've always had like just an unjustified confidence in myself. You know, like really, the belief I've had in myself for my life sometimes is just really belies logic. I don't know where it comes from. So even then, I felt like, yeah, that's like me and Audra. You know, that's like we're gonna do it, no problem. You know, I don't have what she has, but that confidence, thank God, has served me well. And I found, I've had enough talent, and I work hard enough that I've been able to make a career out of it so far. Anyway,
well, you're telling me about Betty White certainly as an female icon, but obviously, I mean, you interned on Baywatch too. There's a lot of probably nice women there that made it easier to pursue.
Very pretty. Yeah. Oh, did you find him?
Oh, what?
There it is. Nice. Well done.
Oh, yeah. This is great for our live YouTube audience. I mean, that's just fantastic.
Right? Like, she was just laying there in bed resting, and like I'm the a-hole who's like, hey, Betty, can we take suggestive pictures together while you're laying there?
Look at that.
And she totally went for it. I couldn't believe it.
She was all on board.
Yeah. You know, in fact, it was funny because Zach Levi had like kissed her at her 90th birthday party like a week before, and we had followed each other on Twitter. So when I took that picture, I added Zach, and I was like, hey, Zach, I'm in bed with your girlfriend. And he unfollowed me. He unfollowed me. He never followed me again. So we're fighting.
So we should not expect an answer on our Twitter poll from him. Or do you think, I mean, he might answer the Twitter poll of Netflix.
Zach, he's probably still mad.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, Zach, I mean, we want you back, so just, you know, get back on your phone. He might be on that phone break, too.
He might be. No, he's got a big movie coming out. I think he's probably busy promoting that.
He probably is. So what was that? I mean, how old were you when you interned on Baywatch? Because that came out in 89.
I mean, I was still in college. It was probably the summer before my senior year. That's right. That's what it was. Because I shaved my head that summer. It was pure nepotism, like the most random bit of nepotism, because my grandfather went to medical school with the dad of one of the creators of Baywatch in Kansas. And
as all good stories begin.
Right? And so somehow through that connection, I ended up getting an internship at Baywatch. And by the way, like, it's not like they had interns all the time. Like, they didn't know what to do with me. Like, it was just... You know, the creator of the show says, oh, we're going to have this kid come in and be an intern, and, you know, he's going to spend a week in each department. And each week the department head was like, you're doing what? Who are you? Why are you here? What's happening? All right, go sit over there. So some departments were more helpful than others. But yeah, it was great.
Well, that, I mean, the first of many good shows that you were on. And I'm wondering, you know, you've been on so many TV shows. I mean, gone several seasons. And what is the process like? I mean, take me through, obviously there's the casting, but like, how do you prepare for an audition? And, you know, when you get the role, what is your thought process going in? And then how do you get comfortable in that role? How many episodes does that take? So right. Just take me through a normal casting and getting on a TV show and how you mentally prepare.
Sure. It's always a little different. Typically... I prepare for my auditions all in the same way now. It's changed over time, though, because when I started, you didn't really have to be off book at auditions. So you would hold the pages, and sometimes you'd be off book, but sometimes you'd have, you know, 11, 12 pages for an audition that you got the day before. And you just can't really get off book that fast, at least not in a reliable way. So for a lot of years, I would just, you know, read. I would rehearse it before. I'd spend time rehearsing and going over it, usually by myself, sometimes with a friend, but usually by myself. And then you go in and just, you know, you give it your best shot. I find that some material, well, I mean, any actor will find this, like some material just clicks. Like some things just work. And then sometimes I'll get an audition and immediately know that, like, this is never going to happen. Like, I would never cast myself in the role of, you know, XYZ. First of all, because that's a terrible name for a character.
Did you still go to those?
Yes.
Why?
Because sometimes you're wrong. Popular, it was a great example. I was 25 probably when I was auditioning for that to play a high school kid. Mm-hmm. Now, look, I have a baby face. I've always had a baby face. When I was 25, I looked like I was 12. Now I look like I'm 30 or something. But I looked like a baby, but I you know, I was a college graduate. Like, I was a serious. Yeah. Took myself very seriously and just thought, this is ridiculous. I'm never going to get cast as this high school kid. And it was like the cool kind of like outsider high school kid.
Yeah.
So I was just screwing. I put a bunch of jewelry on. I sprayed a blue streak in my hair, put on a necklace, and just went in and was like, whatever, I don't care. And like, and then they just kept calling me back. And I every time I was telling Anel, my fiance then, mm-hmm. and wife now, it was like, this is... never gonna happen. Like, what? This is never gonna happen. Until literally they cast me and Ryan Murphy calls up and was like, congratulations. And I was like, I don't understand. like, you've made a horrible mistake. I'm not right for this part. So sometimes you're wrong. So, I would say if you're going in, it's because someone along the line, you know, the casting director or producer, someone saw your picture or knows your work and thinks you could be right. So if you get the audition, then you should go.
How long into a role do you get comfortable? I mean, for like Popular or, you know, Covert Affairs,
yeah.
How many episodes in are you – able to get comfortable? Is that your confidence? Like right away, you're like, all right, I'm good. I feel confident.
Right. It totally depends. I think I did a show called Medical Investigation on NBC where I was playing a doctor. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing where, because of the language of that,
you're good.
Doing this like I'm at a wedding. Because of the language of that and because of the way that show was written, it was so procedural. There was not a lot of character development going on. So I don't feel like I ever really got comfortable in who this guy was. Mm-hmm. So it was really challenging for me. That was the toughest gig that I'd had. For Covert, I was playing a blind veteran. So the physicality of that was very important. And it mm-hmm. took probably halfway through the first season before I was really feeling like I had gotten it down. And it was the same for production. We like mm-hmm. figuring out how to shoot that. Like we would, I remember one of the early episodes, we were shooting a walk and talk where there were three characters, me and Piper, and I think probably Kari Machet were walking down a hallway. And then in the middle of the walk, in the conversation, then we turn a corner and keep walking. And we'd already started shooting it before I realized, oh, wait, how do I know they're turning the corner?
Wait a minute. We just have two branching and you just keep going straight.
Yeah, that's what would have happened because I wasn't holding on. I wasn't being led. I wasn't holding on anybody's elbow. And so we had to go back and reshoot it. I was like, we got to – this makes no sense. It doesn't work. We got to go back and reshoot it. So there was a learning process, and that I think happens with anything. I think typically – and you see that in TV shows all the time. Like, you know, the pilot's one thing, and then episode two, the whole show sometimes feels a little different. Mm-hmm. And then three, four, five episodes in, it really starts to find itself and hit its stride.
Do you think some actors get too comfortable in a role? I mean, and they don't. Oh, they're sure. Like, all right, well, I landed it. I'm good.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I won't name names, but I've had an experience of going to work and where the leads really just want to go home. Want to go home.
Yeah.
And so they're just not working that hard anymore. Like, they've been doing it for a while. And that's kind of heartbreaking. I've seen that a couple times in my career, and so I've always remembered that, particularly on Covert, because mm-hmm. that show went 5 years, and that was the longest of any of the shows that mm-hmm. I've been on. And so as we got into year three and year four and year five, like, I really reminded myself, don't be one of those actors who starts phoning it in or, you know, starts feeling like you've got better places to be.
Because, again, that can, just like we're talking about Betty White's enthusiasm and joy can really have an impact on the people around you. That attitude can do the same thing.
Yes.
And really have an impact.
Yeah.
We talked at the beginning, you know, that the world of acting can be tough and you're hearing things. And do you remember, was there a streak that you went through where it was hearing no or, you know, not getting things for a long time on end?
It happens. Yes. I mean, the last 2 years, like the 2 years after Covert Affairs, were really tough. I mean, I was working sporadically, but I didn't have another TV show until Insatiable. I was recurring on Two Broke Girls mm-hmm. for their last eight episodes, or eight of their last nine. But before that, it was just a couple sporadic things. It was three episodes on The Magicians, or, you know, I'd started directing, so I directed my first feature, We Love You, Sally Carmichael, mm-hmm. Which was its own amazing experience, but, it's not a steady gig. And I think also it was that age transition you were talking about mm-hmm. before. On Covert Affairs, I was a 30 to 33, 34-year-old spy. Mm-hmm. In Insatiable, I'm the dad of a 17-year-old beauty queen. You know, it's a different category.
Yep.
And it took me full 2 years to grow in my beard a little bit, I think.
But it finally is there, though. It's finally there.
But
what thoughts are going through your mind in that 2 years? as you're coming out of this very successful show, what
I should have gone to law school was one of them. It's very different now than it was at the beginning of my career. Like, I got out of college and, you know, I was had a part-time job working at Center Theater Group at the Amundsen Theater downtown. And that was fine because it's just me. Mm-hmm. And it was 3 years before I got my first TV show and could just be an actor.
Were you auditioning at that point every week? Every couple weeks?
I don't remember. It was very, like, it was busy and then it was dead. Mm-hmm. You know, it was busy and then dead. It would be, and by the way, it always, and even now, it always feels like your peers are going out more than you are. It always feels that way. I don't know if it's true or not. Maybe it's true. Mm-hmm. But it always feels that way. Mm-hmm. Partly because you have so little control over it. You know, it's like the anxiety of being the passenger in the airplane and not being able to see out the front windows.
Yeah. Right?
Like somebody else is piloting this plane. It makes you feel anxious because you mm-hmm. know you're not in control. It's a really hard part about this career. But anyway, like now at the point in my life that I'm at now, it's a whole different level of anxiety because I have an entire family depending on mm-hmm. me. And you know, residuals are not what they used to be. Syndication is not like the golden goose that it used to be. So I have to keep working. So there's a pressure now, that there didn't used to be.
And you can't force that, though, right? Can you force that, or is there a, so how do
no,
you...
No, and also, like, you can't walk into a room with bringing that desperation of, like, you know? Like, you can't, because people can smell it. Mm-hmm. Like, you just have to stay grounded. You have to just keep doing your work and just keep going in and doing the best job that you can do. That's all that you can do. The nice thing about... acting that I try to remind people, especially young actors coming up, is acting is one of those things that you can always do. It doesn't always have to be your career. If you really love acting, but your acting career isn't what you'd hoped it would be, you can do something else and still act. There's plenty of opportunities. Like, there's local theater. There's the, you know, like, you can do that. You mm-hmm. can make your own movie on your phone now.
It's incredible.
You know, if you're passionate about it and want to do it. You know, it's so I think that's something important to just keep in mind.
Do you think a lot of people are blinded by that light of fame and stardom and don't have that passion? Like you're saying, it is now easy in the world that we live in where you literally can make something on your phone. You can create your own show. You can write. You can do all that.
Yeah.
Do you think people get blinded by thinking, oh, but a lot of people won't watch it and, oh, it won't get, you know, me thousands and millions of dollars?
Yes. But then you have to ask yourself, but why are you doing it? Right? Like, do you want to be an actor only if you're a movie star? Because if that's your litmus test, well, then I've had a total failure of a career because I am not a movie star, you know? Or are you doing it because it's you love to do it and you want to make a difference? Mm-hmm. If that's the truth, then really it's great if millions of people watch it, but you haven't failed if millions of people don't.
Mm-hmm. I heard someone say once that being successful kind of takes being lonely sometimes because you have to be dedicated, because you have to say no. Do you ever feel that way, or does that seem to relate at all?
It's a I don't know. It's an interesting kind of point of view. I think I don't know that I feel like to be successful you have to be lonely. I think sometimes certain amounts of success can isolate you. Certainly in this business, you know, if you reach a certain level of success and fame, it can end up being very isolating. You know, certainly I have friends who are much more famous than I am, and it's difficult for them to go anywhere. You know, they can't just hop over and go to Disneyland yep. or the grocery store. Like, it becomes a problem.
Yes.
You know, so I think in that sense, it can be isolating. Also, I think sometimes the hardest working people, you end up self-isolating yourself just because you've thrown yourself so much into the, your work that you lose track of the rest of your life.
You're talking about family. I know in 2000 you married your co-star.
Yes.
And congratulations. I mean, 18 years.
Yeah.
That's incredible, especially in Hollywood. What's the secret? What do we got? What's the secret? 18 years.
I don't know. There's no secret. I think, you know, I think a marriage is, you know, like any relationship, it's kind of is what you make it, right? Like I think you have to take – if you take your vows seriously, I think if you remind yourself to not just love your partner but respect your partner – and it's a choice that you make really every day. You know, like your marriage vows you make on one day, but then the choice to be married you make every day that you're married. And if you start making choices to not be married, yep. well then, you know, then you're going to go down that road and the marriage is going to be over.
Is that a discussion of what roles you play now being someone who's in obviously a very serious relationship, you know, the most serious relationship you can have,
yeah.
but what roles you play as an actor? Is that a discussion of what you will do and not do on camera and as far as the relationship with people on screen?
It's interesting. It was more of an issue when we were younger. I mean, we got together very young.
Yeah,
we were in our
20s.
Yep. And so, you know, when we were in our 20s, I think like most people in their 20s, like you're very jealous. You know, it's very new. And especially in this business where, you know, an actor in his 20s is like, you know, whatever show I was on, I was the love interest to mm-hmm. some pretty actress, right? Mm-hmm. Or if it was my show, it was some pretty actress was coming in to play my love interest every week. Mm-hmm. And that's not a natural situation for a relationship, right? Like, that's a very weird thing to have to deal with. So that was tough early on for us. It's gotten easier as we've gotten older and, you know, been more secure, I think. Mm-hmm. And
that so, trust is built up over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially, when a young relationship and you're young in Hollywood and the things people have done for success in this town.
Well, but also, like, I think for Anel and I, like, neither one of us has ever been all that interested in going to clubs and being at every premiere and the flashiness of it and the nightlife and that whole, you know, like that whole Hollywood scene that people have in their minds. Mm-hmm. That just wasn't our world. Like, we were both kind of small town kids and kind of liked living that way.
Has your dreams of what you, I guess, want to do in acting changed since now you have three kids and obviously you've been married for 18 years? Has that changed of putting, you know, family certainly so much higher than work?
Well, you know what? Because we've had kids, the unexpected difficulty of being an actor has been the travel. Because I didn't know anybody in the business growing up, so I really didn't know how it worked, and I didn't know how often I was going to have to be away from home. And also, so much of television and film has moved out of Los Angeles since I started. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole business changed while my career was getting started. So
people are shooting in Atlanta, Toronto, Vancouver,
all over the world.
Yeah.
Literally, I've filmed all over the world, and because of the nature of the television season, typically I can't bring my family with me because our kids were in school and we would be shooting, you know, for 5 months or 6 months, but it would be during school. And so we don't want to take the kids out for half the school year and then put them back in for the other half mm-hmm. of the school year. And Anel at the time, you know, she was still auditioning, so she needed to be here. And like the biggest conflicts for us in our relationship and for our family has always been not my job, but the travel that was required for my job, where I'd be shooting in Vancouver and flying home every weekend. Which is, you know, great. And, oh, it's so nice. Like, Chris is such a good husband. He flies home every weekend. But, you know, it is. But, you know, when your wife's home pregnant the rest of the week by herself with a small kid, you know.
Weekend is still 2 out of 7
Yeah.
Days.
It's, you know, it looks a little bit less heroic from her point of view. rightly so. It's just, so that's been really challenging. The biggest change for me has been my interest in directing. I started directing a few things at Funny or Die. I wrote and directed a little comedic short called Pet Hunt for them. And then they had me back to direct this sports rant writer series with Ty Burrell, which was really fun.
Nice.
And then I started doing some stuff for Covert. I did webisodes for them, and then I did 3 episodes for them. And,
nice.
And then I did my feature about a year and a half ago.
Is that something that you thought at the very beginning of your career that you'd be interested in?
I mean, not really. I didn't really seriously consider it. But the longer that I've been doing this, the more I've wanted to do that because it requires more. Like, I love being a part of a television show. Being an actor on a TV show requires, you know, you do your little part. It's your little slice, and you come in and you do your slice, and you leave. But as a director, you have the whole pie at your disposal, and it's really fun. It's really fun. So I was glad. It turns out I had a knack for it. So I'm hoping to continue working as a director.
Awesome. I want to go to our live chat. We have a couple people. First, Emerald Eyed Phoenix says that your attention to detail was epic on Covert, that you became an amazing character because of your careful, insightful portrayal. Then Jack says that he has a question. He said, which role do you prefer to play, a more comical like an Ugly Betty or dramatic like Covert Affairs?
Just for pure fun, the comedy is more fun. It's at least right now. And frankly, it's one of the things that I love about Insatiable is it required me to be more ridiculous than I've ever been in my career with a character, but also required me to be more emotionally true and available. Than any other character that I've played in the same character. Like, it's the swings, like, in this show, like, where it starts and where it ends, like, the journey of my character in Insatiable that you're going to see on Friday when you're staying up all night watching all 12 episodes is remarkable. And a credit to Lauren Gussis, who's the creator of the show and is just such a talented, amazing writer. And all the writers on our show. As an acting challenge, it's funny because it's actually, I think it may have been the most challenging role that I've had so far. And I didn't know it was going to be that when I signed up.
That wouldn't have changed whether you would have signed up. You'd probably appreciate that challenge.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It was like such a, like an unexpected blessing, you know? I mean, you read the first pilot script and you have no idea really where it's going to go long term. And it's so satisfying.
Does each episode leave you at a cliffhanger? Does it make you? I know Netflix shows definitely do that a lot of times. That it's like, oh, well, I have to watch episode 2. Yes. Well, now I have to watch episode 3.
Yes, and the deeper you get in, the faster the pace goes, and the more you want to keep going. Yeah, it's like, you know, you're like in a barrel heading toward Niagara. like there's no stopping.
How many seasons do you think that could go? I mean, have you thought about that, of how many seasons that...
Oh, I don't know. I haven't... Yeah, no, I don't know. It could go for... I mean, it could... Lauren's such a... She's a creative genius, so where it could go, I don't know. You know, Lauren Gussis was a writer on Dexter for many years. Mm-hmm. So just, like, imagine, like, a Dexter sensibility put into the world of Southern beauty pageants.
Great mix.
Yeah.
Great mix.
Yeah.
What is your definition of success?
You know, I think it's different for everybody. So for me, I think success is being able to support my family so that they're able to pursue their dreams and do the things that they want to do in their lives. Overcoming surmountable challenges.
In acting, in life?
In life. You know, I don't know. I've never had like it was funny. In college, for a while, I had a picture of an Oscar up in my closet. And then I took it down. And the reason is very revealing. Because I thought to myself, well, you know what? I don't know if I want that as a goal. Because when I win it, then I won't have any more goals. So I'm just going to take it down. And so other than that, like, I haven't really had like a, oh, I want this specific thing, and then I'm successful. Like, I've had a lot of success in mm-hmm. my life, and what you learn every time you achieve something you've been chasing is that, well, then there's just the next hill, you know, mm-hmm. like, it's just the next thing. So I think, you know, maybe success is just getting up and keep moving after you've had a failure.
Mm-hmm. In 50 years, when people look back on your life and career, what three things do you want them to take from it?
That's really presumptuous. In 50 years, anyone's going to be looking back at my life and career. In 50 years...
what do you want people to say? Man, he was...
He was so handsome. So, so just pretty to look at. I don't know. I think I honestly don't know. I don't really think about things that way. Mm. Like, I kind of assume that after I'm gone, you know, here's the thing. I'm a firm believer in like, did you see Coco?
The no. Pixar movie? Yep, the new one.
Yeah. So there's a great the idea behind this film is that, you know, people stay alive, like, in the afterlife as long as there are people that remember them, hmm. right? And I think, like, that's kind of, like, I don't believe in immortality in the sense that anybody lives forever. Like, mm-hmm. you live as long as the people whose lives you have touched, like, mm-hmm. live. The people, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And so I just hope that, on the whole, I'm a more positive effect on the people in my life than I am a negative. Mm-hmm. Like, you're never going to always be everybody's cheerleader. You're never going to always have a positive effect on mm-hmm. everyone's life, mm-hmm. even as much as you try.
Because you're going to come across someone on a bad day, and whether it's your bad day or their bad day. And so yeah. you never know how they're going to interpret things.
Exactly.
Yes.
But on the whole, mm-hmm. I would like to be remembered as the kind of guy that that lifts people up.
Final question. What advice do you have for young actors, whether that's people who are the 10-year-old at the Fresno Theater or their yeah. other community yeah. theater, or someone who is just graduating college, going through the 3 years that you went through? What advice do you have?
Honestly, I would say, by all means, if there's nothing else that you can do with your life, then pursue this. You know, if this is the thing and you have to do it and you're going to be miserable going after anything else, then do this. But if you can do something else, then you should. This is just, it's a really tough career. Mm-hmm. And I wish people thought of acting more like people think of playing music or playing a musical instrument. You know what I mean? Like, lots of people learn how to play musical instruments growing up. Very few people become professional musicians. But they keep up with the music.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they play guitar around the campfire. Or they, mm-hmm. you know, like...
And it can still be a positive, such a positive in your life.
Yes. It can be such a positive and so fulfilling. And with acting, for some reason, it becomes like a zero-sum game. Like, you either are a professional actor or you're someone who gave up. You know?
Yeah.
And I just think, like, there's so many things that you can do with your life. Just don't limit yourself. Like, but again, if you've got to, well, then give it a shot. By all means, give it a shot. Just kind of know what you're walking into and make sure that you've got... I think you do have to have that irrational confidence that I had as a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, you do have to come in with that. Whether or not you keep it, you do have to come in with it because it's an insane thing to try to do for a living. If you can do it, it can be really great. But it's tough. Like it was, I was talking to Ty Burrell, and I did a sitcom years ago called Out of Practice, and we used to like throw the football around during times off and like talk about career stuff, and that was his first TV show. And I said, listen, you just have to be ready, because while you're on a TV show, you're the king of the world. You're a celebrity. Yeah. Everybody thinks you're amazing. You come to work and the, you know, security guys are like waving you in.
You got your
trailer,
your room.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, cappuccinos are showing up like every hour on the hour. You know, like everyone's clapping for you for everything you do. And the second that show is canceled, you're just another fucking actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you have to be able to weather that. You have to be able to know that when everyone's kissing your butt, that you don't really deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to know that
the low is never as bad as what you think either.
And then when it's over and you can't even get an audition for, you know, a drama because you were just on a comedy and now everyone thinks you can only do comedy. Like you have to know that that's not true either. So you just have to be strong, and you have mm-hmm. to be resilient, I think is the word.
No, 100%. Well, that's great advice to close on. Yeah. I really do appreciate that. And I thank you so much for coming on. Real quick, because he had a question in the chat. Which character was the hardest to play or easiest type to play? It was for Emerald Eye Phoenix in the chat.
Oh, I watch Insatiable, and then let me know what you think at the end of it, because I think this was my most challenging role to date.
Nice. Yeah. Well, let you know on Twitter and on Instagram at Chris Gorham. And certainly thankful to be here on the Popcorn Talk again at the Popcorn Talk on Instagram and on Twitter, and at the Only MC on Twitter and on Instagram, because we have our poll, which is how soon is it okay to give spoilers on a Netflix show? And our three ones that we have are 3 days, 1 week, and 3 months.
This
so definitely go
answer.
On Twitter. Yes, this will set.
Wait, we don't know the answer yet.
We don't. I'll look.
What's is there something? Is something leading?
Right now we have 3 days leading.
That's it.
And 3 weeks. That's a set soon.
That's fast. That's surprising.
Wow. So when this comes out, you got till Monday.
That's it. All right, folks. You've got till Monday to finish Insatiable. That's it.
There we go.
And I'm telling you everything, so hurry.
Oh, man. Thank you so much to everyone who joined us in the live chat. We're asking questions. We're live here every single Monday on the Popcorn Talk, and we'd love to have people join us in the live chat. And certainly if you're joining us via Apple Podcasts as well, tell a friend, rate, comment, like, subscribe, you know, leave us some positive fan mail and positive messages.
Please.
And you know what? Do that on your phone and then get off your phone for a little bit.
Yeah,
take a
yeah.
day, whether it's once a week, whether it's once a month, and be able to just explore the world outside of the media. It's out there.
It is out there.
You just got to search sometimes. So thank you guys very much for joining us. Hopefully this blessed your week. Hopefully it was some inspiration. We'll see you next week.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.